Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of The Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric. Hello, Don Taylor. How are you?
I'm peachy. How are you, Rick Emerson?
I am fantastic. You know why I'm fantastic?
No, I don't.
Because I know something you don't know.
What do you know?
Well, it's not that exciting.
Oh.
It's that I prepared today's show open specifically for you.
Really?
And I did it even before we were snarking about plastic bags last hour. So it's not like it's a thing I'm doing just so you like me again.
So it's, oh, okay.
That's clearly not going to happen.
So it's not a passive-aggressive thing either.
Okay, why would you...
I don't know.
Now, hold on. You damn woman. Now, why... Now, why would you assume that if I was going to put something together, especially for the beginning of this show, as a result, or which it's not, but as an outgrowth of our whole discussion, our whole, I wouldn't even say an argument, but our whole, our back and forth, our exploratory debate about plastic bags. If I was going to put something together for the beginning of the show, why would you assume that it would be passive aggressive and not nice? I think someone else is projecting
like to
her
poke.
Passive
sometimes
aggression.
Sometimes you like to poke with pointy sticks.
Yeah, but that's active aggression. I don't think I'm ever...
that's true.
I take it as sort of a point of pride that I'm always actively aggressive. I try never to be passive about, like, anything ever. I mean, I really try to be just as overt and lacking in subtlety as possible at all times.
Okay, you're right.
If I'm passive, it's just by accident. It means I'm not trying hard enough. Mm. No, if I was going to put something together for you, as I did before I deleted it right now... Before I took it away, since there's now no point in giving you something that we treated with scorn, it was going to be for the purposes of nicety, and more to the point, the overarching reason for that statement was that I prepared it actually last night, before it was one of the last things I did before I went to bed last night, this morning, whenever.
Well, that is very nice.
Oh, fine. Now that you've just stomped all over it, now that I've thrown my pearls before swine. All right. Well, whatever. Anyway, so we'll just start the show. Here's the thing that I put together last night to try to be nice to Dawn that she's now misconstruing and would have perceived mean in any event. So, all right. The show begins now.
How can I thank you, you mysterious black-clad hunk of a night thing?
No need, little lady. Your tears of gratitude are enough for me. You see, I was once a badass vampire, but love and a pesky curse defanged me, and now I'm just a big fluffy puppy with bad teeth. No, not the hair. Never the hair.
But there must be some way I can show my appreciation.
No. Helping those in need's my job. And working up a load of sexual tension and prancing away like a magnificent poof is truly thanks enough.
I understand. I have a nephew who's gay, so...
Say no more. Evil's still afoot. And I'm almost out of that Nancy Boy hair gel I like so much. Quickly, to the Angelmobile. Away! Go on with you. Play the big strapping hero while you can. You have a few surprises coming your way. A ring of Amara. A visit from your old pal Spike. And oh yeah, your gruesome, horrible death.
It's after the hour of one, and this is the month of May in the year of our Lord 2011. Thank you for coming by, making part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, looming high above the milk packing district here glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon, the home of all good things and people. Thank you for joining us. It is Wednesday? Yes, Wednesday. And welcome to Day 12. It is Wednesday, May 25th, 2011. Hey, does Court still say welcome to that whole thing?
I don't know. I haven't really actually listened to them in a while. I always miss the beginning of the show.
Mm-hmm.
When
the
I
beginning
do listen,
of the
I
kind
show.
Of
go, oh, it's after 10, and then I...
You hear all the rest of it. It's just the beginning that you
right.
miss every single time. Yeah. I understand. No, I know what we're saying. Say no more.
Usually, I only listen on David Walker days.
Really?
I'll be honest.
They're just a conduit for David Walker. They're just a mechanism. They're a Walker delivery system.
Pretty
That's
much,
all they
yeah.
are to you.
Oh,
fair enough. I don't even really care. It's just one of those things that I just sort of wondered about out of the blue just now. Hello, it is Wednesday. If you'd like to join us today telephonically, you can do so. It's 503-505-6964. That is 503-505-6964. You'd like to get on board today. You use guys want to call and talk and the share and the hey. It's 503-505-6964 with your comments, questions, your clarifications, your whatnot. You can also email if you like. It's rick at rickemerson.com or Dawn, D-A-W-N at rickemerson.com. Let's see. Text box on the website open. Also, you can Skype if you like. That is all one word. That is Rick Emerson Show via Skype. You can do that. Ooh, wait. If only that were possible. If only that were a thing that was actually turned on at the moment. Fail. All right, that'll be active here in just a second. Just a skosh. Not actually right now at this very moment, but in just a second here. Hold on a second. By the way, the very best part of that about that opening there, it's not even the obvious line, which is where he says a big fluffy puppy. It's actually there's two moments there that are gold. I mean, it's all really really good. But the first is when he says he does this long pause, this rest. He says to the Angel Mobile, and then he pauses, and then he says. Away! And it's sort of... And he does his, like, its own paragraph. It's like he does this total line break between those two things. And then it's actually the way that he almost undersells the follow-up. He does it. He does the same kind of thing again when he's talking. He goes, not the hair, never the hair. And he sort of... And he does the follow-up line, the sort of tag, almost as like an afterthought. It's almost like a softer delivery. That really is the genius of that guy right there. So.
There's a moment there when he's saying, you know, that Nancy boy hair gel that I like so much. And that always reminds me because I say always because I've seen that scene about 47,000 times because that's my favorite moment in all of Angel.
It's almost like Rick Emerson knew that
it's
and prepared that
like
opening
that.
Just for you
I
last
know.
Night.
With love.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate that. But the way he says that, it always reminds me of this one line. Again, as we've talked about many times, how things, weird little things from TV shows get burned into your consciousness and become a sort of a, not really an in-joke, but a repetitive phrase that you and your spouse use
right.
all of the time. And there was an episode of The Critic. And I don't even remember the context at this point, but you know how every once in a while J. Sherman's stomach would talk?
Right.
And he was in front of the fridge, and he was looking for something in the fridge, and he was doing something, and the camera panned down to his stomach, and his stomach said, "And those little pearl onions that I love so well." And so now whenever the subject of pearl onions comes up...
You're required to say
I'm required to say that.
It's a thing that you have to...
But it was exactly the same cadence as when he says that Nancy boy hair gel.
Now, the one person on planet Earth who doesn't care for Spike has now just sent me a message about it. This is, I believe this is a woman. This is the woman who made the observation about black and white iPhone cases and the black iPhone case was going to lower the property values in your neighborhood. And then immediately typed, "I am a black..." or whatever, like, on the screen to, like, eradicate any, like, racism or whatever. But right up top at the beginning of today's show, with everybody with the agita and the aggro. See, I think it's that the rest of the world is off kilter today, and I am my same lovable, charming self. I think that's what it is. I think it's that everybody else is tilted slightly on their axis.
That could be it.
The very first the communication or message from any audience member today is this. And it's spelled out phonetically. It's just sort of a ugh, which is a bunch of U's followed by a G-H. And it just says, F Spike. Why would you play a Spike clip? The only thing more cringeworthy than Spike, the message continues, is Angel's Irish accent. Also, Andrew. So, anyway, we can all agree that Angel's Irish accent is...
Oh, yeah.
I mean, really not even an accent at all. It just sounds like he's got an impediment of some kind. It sounds like he's missing part of his jaw.
And I loved the character of Spike, and I disliked what they did with him.
Well, but that has nothing to do.
That has nothing to do with the actor or the character itself.
You wouldn't have cared for what the character became if you didn't like the character to begin with. It's like the character of House.
It's not like Dawn or Connor, who I just disliked from the very beginning and never changed my mind.
Connor.
Yeah.
No, but that's the thing. There's certain characters that are just ill-conceived and you never come around on them. I mean, Spike is just one of those characters that they ran out of interesting situations to put him in, and so they started creating completely improbable and unbelievable situations for the sake of eliciting certain reactions and responses from him, and they lost all the internal structure of the character.
Yeah, right now I'm rewatching season 2 of Buffy, and it's been a while since I've seen it, and it's just great. Yesterday I saw the episode where the old buddy of Buffy's from her previous school shows up, and it turns out he's like in with the fake vampire lovers club.
Oh yeah.
And he wants to be turned into a vampire, so he brings Spike to the underground bunker, and she explains to him, they're gonna turn us and make us all magical and we'll all live forever. It's like, no, idiot, they're gonna show up and they're going to be pigging out on the all you can eat moron buffet.
Did you watch the show Action, the Jay Moore series Action?
Yeah.
So the lead guy in that underground vampire club was then on the series Action as, and I have to make sure they get this right, because there was a running gag in the show that they always confused him with Adam Rifkin. And his name, he played a character named Alan Rafkin. Yeah. And he was a screenwriter. And so he existed on the show.
I ever realized that was the same guy.
It's the same guy. If anybody has not seen the television program Action, which only ran for, I think, 13 episodes, and I think 9 of them aired and the rest didn't, the show very badly mishandled by Fox. I mean, really one of the most egregious mishandlings of a show, like in the last decade. It really is. That is a show that you really should just don't even rent it. Just go buy it. Just go buy it. It's one season. You can get it for like $9. Go buy the series Action on DVD. But it's a really hyper scathing look at the Hollywood movie system and the Hollywood studio system. And so his character existed just to show how low on the rung of importance screenwriters and writers were. And just the utter contempt with which everyone, everywhere in the film industry treated writers. And so they were constantly saying, isn't Adam Rafkin going to be here, or Adam Rifkin? And they would say, no, it's Alan Rafkin. And then they would have to constantly be corrected that it was not a guy they cared about at all, but it was just the writer. And that's that guy who's flaunting, he has the big Rivers Cuomo glasses, and he has the purple cloak, and he's like a little nebbish of a guy, a little wormy guy. That's him. I forget his name. I think his name is Jared something or other. But he's a comedian, sort of a character actor, and he kind of plays that guy. He kind of plays a nerdy, kind of wanting to be popular, can't quite make it work, sort of a guy and everything. But he's really, really good. That's a great episode. That is what, like, season.
It's season
two.
Yeah. And then the episode today, it's like it's also interesting because it's all in that that whole Spike Drusilla angel arc where Drusilla is just completely bat poop crazy because, as we discover out, when Angel was still evil and he was Angelus, he made her that way.
Which is awesome.
He made her insane. And then he kept like toying with her and messing with her and was going to turn her into a vampire and doing stuff and seducing her and not seducing her. Then she checked herself into a convent, and the night before she was going to go to the convent, he like turned her into a vampire and then just destroyed her mind. And now she's trying, and then now she's like sick or something, and Spike's trying to get her better, and they're doing all these things.
Did they ever explain exactly what she was suffering from?
Other than being nuts. Bad accent syndrome. She's just weak. She had iron poor vampire blood or something. I'm not sure. She just seemed kind of
a general malaise.
Yeah,
she had fibromyalgia
because they were looking for some kind of special thing in a book of spells to do something.
She has some vampiric Epstein-Barr syndrome.
Yeah, basically, yeah. Yes. She was bitten by a spotted fever tick.
A great moment in that season, in season 2 of Buffy. By the way, and I think it's just that we just mention Anna Griffin's name, and then it's like, that just triggers some, in the backwater of our brains, just some switch closes that triggers Buffy thoughts. That's all it is. We just need to make, it's like saying Beetlejuice, but if we say Anna Griffin 3 times, we just start talking about either Buffy the Vampire Slayer or The Wire. One of the great moments of that season 2 is when Angel's got the I don't know. He's got the big block that's got the huge demon in it that he's trying to bring around the end of the world. I forget the guy's name, but he was some demon or other that he got from a museum or whatever. And there is that great. This is the moment when I truly came around on James Marsters and I realized how good he was as Spike. And when I, because the first season of Buffy, it's not bad. It's just okay. They were just kind of finding, you know, it was certainly better than the film, but they're kind of finding their footing. There were moments of little flashes of greatness in that first season where you kind of saw what it was going to be. But then in the second season, they really found their voice and they really, I think they figured out who they were, as Springsteen once said about one of his songs, he figured out who he was writing about and how they talked. And, I think the moment when I really, really came around to all of that in the second season is when Spike, who I think maybe is also in a wheelchair at one point in the second season.
Who?
Is Spike also in a wheelchair in the second season? He can't stand, right? Isn't that the deal?
Yeah, that's right.
Or is he just feigning that? Is he faking it?
Something happened. Anyway, I think he ended up faking it, but yeah.
But Angel is showing the huge block of the demon, you know, and he's like, and he's talking about he's going to bring the end of the world. And then Spike just does this, and wackiness ensues, line from the back of the warehouse where they live. And it was just... which was just delivered with just the perfect combination of like deadpan and contempt. I mean, he just sold it like 1,000%. Here's the thing about this. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, it's a Cathla. Sorry, how could I have forgotten? It's a Cathla, and I think that there was like another tedious sort of discussion about a Cathla in the library. Yes, after Kendra and Buffy. After Kendra and Buffy beat him down, some rocks or something fall on him, and that's why he's in the wheelchair.
Oh yeah.
Here's the thing. I have to clarify this once and for all because it just bugs me not knowing this. So this is from. I have to drag this window open so I can see the name of the user. But I believe that the name is Meta, M-E-T-T-A. So we talked about Meta.
Yeah.
Okay. And this is not that it really matters. But you would, with a name, Meta, that sounds like a female name, right?
It does.
Doesn't really sound like a male name. So I just, it doesn't, not like, nothing it really affects anything. I'm just sort of curious. I don't like being sort of puzzled by either unusual or gender neutral names. I have to clarify this, that she actually took a moment to, clarify what she said last week that I had repeated. She said, quote, during the discussion about, you know, white iPhones and black iPhones, what I actually said was, quote, I am black and not a giant racist, end quote, fail. Which I knew to be the case, but when I recreated it just now at the top of the show, I said, I am a black, because that's funnier.
Okay.
It's, so, anyway. All right, well, in any event.
And we know people who are black.
Are a black. Yes.
Or who would like to be and just merely tweet it to,
yes, we do.
Others.
Yes, we do, don't we? I'd forgotten all about that. Thank you.
Oh, I can't forget that.
Can't unsee it. All right. Well, anyway, I don't even know what we're doing here. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for coming along. It is Wednesday. We've got your Clergy Watch coming up today. Also, we are Democracy on the March. We'll talk to Anna Griffin from the Oregonian. We will talk to her about many things, including, but not limited to, her acceptance into the Nieman Fellowship at Harvard, which means, and so I want to know, like, when she's going away, does she live there for a whole year, or is it a thing where it's like a year, but that's like once, but it's like when you win free cheeseburgers for a year, but like you get one every Thursday or something. Or is it like some Harvard correspondence class where they just send her worksheets in the mail?
I get so stressed out about things like that. So yeah, I want to know, you know, are they covering her expenses or is it just like, here's an opportunity, but you have to like, you know, pay for your room and board and everything else. You have to get an apartment and you have to get yourself out there and you have to, because I don't know how those things work. I have an opportunity that has arisen to go work on something at some unclear future date. And I was like,
is it landmine disposal?
No, it's an old friend of mine is putting together a show with like fire dancers and taiko drummers.
Okay.
And was looking for people to do things. And I said, I'd love to do that. And kind of jokingly on Facebook, I said, I'd love to do that. Oh, wait, I have no skills. And I'm in Oregon. But, you know, and he wrote me and said, I'd love to have you on board. That would be awesome. And as for being in Oregon, don't worry about it. We're putting together the money because we're going to be transporting people from all over the place. And so it's like, so now I'm just trying to figure out what my skill set might be.
Yeah, I was going to say, no offense, but what would you do at a fire dancing show?
I'd do something like help with PR.
Other than endanger the audience.
Stage managing, something. something like that. Help herd people from
just yelling at people,
something.
Basically.
Basically, yes.
You'd just be. You know what you are.
I wouldn't be fire dancing or doing the. But the thing is, it's like it's going to either be in L.A. or San Francisco or Hawaii. And if they'll, like, you know, send me there. But then that's the thing. It's like, are you also going to pay me? Where will I sleep? How will this work? I don't know. It's all a mystery. So,
you know what you are? You're like a limping, bevicadined Lucy Van Pelt. Sort of. You're the Lucy Van Pelt of Portland Broadcasting.
Am I pulling footballs out from under people? What?
Well, I mean, not for me. I'm just saying in general.
How so, sir?
In terms of your persona, I would say that if I were to... Let me put it this way.
Because of the yelling at people.
What Peanuts character would you believe yourself to be if not Lucy Van Pelt? And the answer is you can't come up with anybody because it's so obviously her.
Yeah, maybe. Or Pigpen.
Or Franklin. So in any event...
Show enough.
Don't do... See, no. See, if you do that, then we're going to have that whole conversation. And then it just leads to all kinds of awkwardness.
And people, yes, because people won't realize I'm referencing someone else, and then they'll think I'm saying show enough, which I am not.
You dig.
Yeah.
Let's never do that again.
No.
Okay. Sorry about everything. It's 503-505-6964. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com or Dawn, D-A-W-N, at rickemerson.com. So, yeah, we'll talk to Anna Griffin today from the Oregonian. We'll have your Democracy in the March clergy watch. Don Taylor tracking the following headlines for you on this Wednesday.
John Edwards faces prosecution for covering up his affair.
Awesome.
The Book of Mormon wins a whole lot of awards at the Drama Desk Awards.
Not the actual Book of Mormon.
No, the musical, yes. Book of Mormon. And a man has a freak accident with compressed air and blows up like a football.
Really? Does it involve his anus or pooper?
It involves his buttock.
Okay. Well, good enough. That's anal-like. So
it's anal adjacent.
Hey, is there anal adjacent? That sounds like that's like the worst possible apartment location you could ever hope to have. Hey, is there a porn film called Anal Enough? Anal enough to fill up. And then there's just a huge nude dog pile in the front yard while they're tossing the football around. All right, we have to ask Jim Willig about that. Anal enough, because I found out there is a 21 Hump Street.
Oh.
I thought that was going to be my big breakthrough into the world of erotica, but no, that's on the... Let's see. Anal enough. All right, I'll ask him about that on Friday. Let's see. I just got to read this really quickly. So do you remember... Well, this is now an ongoing saga. So when I was at Roger Klein, there was the woman who tweeted the thing about, oh, you know, Rick Emerson, my imaginary BFF, walked by. And then I said something about I was creeping people out. And she said, no. She said again on Twitter... And what's weird is that none of these statements are directed at me. They're directed... It's like I'm talking to her, but then she's, like, answering... She's, like, speaking to the world. Like, I would say, so, ma'am, I hope I didn't creep you out. And she'd, Rick Emerson hopes you didn't creep me out. And then I would say something again, like, to her, and then she would sort of, like, respond to everyone else. But she finally answered... she said... Because she'd said, Rick Emerson thought he creeped me out. That's not true. Also, you haven't met my creepy husband. And we were... wondering, well, what was that all about? Like, why would you refer to your husband on Twitter as being creepy? So now I got an email from her, and it says her name is Daisy, and Daisy says, yes, my husband is creepy, but in a wonderful way, which of course we appreciate. As an example, okay, now this is pretty great. Now, so you see, normally when somebody says, well, he's creepy, but in a sweet kind of way, that's where you just think that, like, you know, that's where you wonder just like what she was marrying young to get away from. But this is legitimately great. Daisy says, yes, my husband is creepy, but in a wonderful way. As an example, he made me a mix CD of stalker songs and then left it outside my door like a stalker, which is sort of awesome.
That is.
I'm going to steal that idea, just so you know.
That's a great idea.
It's totally great. I'm going to completely do that, and I'm going to leave it at my wife's work. With then just, you know, but then with like some sort of like a creepy Polaroid of like a doll tied to a chair.
No, of her sleeping.
Yes. Well done. He's also the one that, creepily, made you wish me a happy anniversary, making you, Rick, the most romantic man in our relationship. Best show ever, Daisy. All right, so there you go. So, clarified. Yeah. Awesome. Let's see, what else? It's something else I was going to read. Let's see. Someone says, when is anal ever enough? Well, fair enough.
Sometimes it's too much.
Touche, I guess.
I have to say. Sometimes it's just too much.
Let's see.
It's simply uncalled for.
Something else that I was going to say. Why did I write down... I can't even read my own writing lately. Why did I write down Hannibal Stedman?
I have no idea.
There's two things that don't make any sense. Hannibal Steadman. Oh, it's ham-fisted.
Oh.
Ham-fisted radio coming up today, 4 p.m. Pacific time at Cascadia.fm with Don Taylor and Bobby Fatboy Roberts. What will you be speaking about today?
We will have Sabrina Miller of Suck It Radio and Betsy Richter of Redoing Media on, and we are going to be talking about women in podcasting and why there seems
to be anyone would listen to that.
Exactly. Why there seems to be, they seem to be overlooked, Rick Emerson, who, because last week, actually last week, Bobby and I were talking about the Wonder Northwest panel where I asked the question about, you know, how come there weren't any dames on the podcast panel? And you said...
Okay, now we should say, by the way, now this was... we should clarify that that for anybody who was there and wondered about this or has not heard this story, that this was sort of a thing that, A, was worked at an event, and B, was your idea, you damn woman. So I was moderating this podcast panel at Wonder Northwest, and it was all about, you know, the crazy world of online broadcasting, and it was Kyle Yount from KaijuCast and Matt Hunter, who seems like he ought to be like a sort of J.T. Lancer-esque, like Private Eye, who does a thing called A Jumps B Shoots about video games, and Court and Bobby and Cable Hashitani. And so it was all dudes. And so Don said, you know, well, there are no ladies on the panel. And I was like, I don't know. They asked me to stand at the front of the room and tell you to ask questions, and so I shall. And so I didn't, you know, I just go where they tell me to go. So Don has this idea, which was executed, by the way, flawlessly by you, where you actually at one point just raised your hand. You said, well, I've noticed that these are all men on the panel. Why are there no women present to give the female perspective on the podcasting world? And then I, again, at Don's request, immediately shouted back, shut your whore mouth. And I wish that we had been videotaping the audience at that moment. I can't believe we didn't tell that story, actually, because that
about
is the audience.
About half of them, like, thought it was hilarious. But I heard a couple of actual gasps.
There was a lot of, like, oh. And there was, I looked, and there was actually one woman, and it was a woman who did the thing of, like, clutching her purse close to her, like, pulling it in, like, there was going to be a rumble. So it was awesome.
The other option was you had said, alternatively, you might say, bitches, be quiet.
Yeah, bitches, leave.
So I was talking about that a little bit. I told that story on Hamfisted Radio last week. And we said, well, we should talk. Bobby actually said, we should talk more about that, about women, you know, podcasting. Why?
Suck up.
Well, because my thing was, I said, the reason, honestly, comes down to it. The reason why I think there were no women on that panel is it just never occurred to anyone. That's the thing. It's not a matter of, like, deliberately excluding women. It's just podcasting is one of those things that you think, we need to find some podcasters, and you immediately think, guys.
Well,
men
are louder and noisier.
Yeah.
And so it's easier to notice them because they have no tact or subtlety.
Yeah, and so we and Bobby thought that was interesting that I said, I think people just don't really think about it. So Betsy Richter is going to be on, and Sabrina, and we're going to talk a little bit about that and probably other things as well.
I would say that it's easier to, it is sometimes easy to overlook women because in that regard and in entertainment because, you know, because women have a sense of, like, proportion and appropriateness. And they're just, you know, and social decorum. And men just, you know, to some degree have none of those things. Or they're just so, like, minimized. And so as a result, you know, you just tend to notice the guy in the classroom who is shouting the loudest and making farting noises with his armpit. And then that's the guy you end up, you know, because later, like, he's the only guy that you can remember at all because everybody else was sort of quiet and waiting their turn respectfully. So that is really where the crass, retarded nature of the American male really it works in our works in our favor. It works, well, in my favor. It works to our advantage. Let's see. I was, by the way, I did want to clarify this because I've gotten a couple of questions about this today via the Twitter. So I do before we do anything else here, I want to take just a brief moment, and let's see if I want to see if it's actually been changed by now. I want to take a brief moment to thank a couple of people. So I want to thank Mr. and I have to say this actually that. Because we spoke on the phone and then we emailed, I am unsure about how his last name is pronounced because I realize I never actually said it out loud. It's Andy. It's from Willamette Week, and his last name is spelled Kryza. So it looks like Kryza, but if it could be, I mean, if it's European or, you know, if it could be like, it could be the thing where it's like where there's like a silent F or something, or not even a silent F, but like an invisible F, or it could be Kritza, it could be Kretza. Yeah. I just don't know. But we'll call it Kritza for now, because that's linguistically pleasing in the inside on the palate of my mouth. So Andy Kritza, who wrote a great piece about zombie economics for the for Willamette Week that came out today. So that's actually in the new Willamette Week. You can find that at newsstands everywhere. You can also read it online at wweek.com, where there's just, by the way, just the hugest picture of my head. I mean, there's just a gigantic... I mean, really, the entire article seems to exist solely for the purpose of just having this huge picture of my mug right there. That, however, is less amusing than the fact that I think... And they may have changed this in the online version. They have. And so I want to thank listener Chris, who I think brought this to their attention. This has not been changed in the print version, though. And he said it was in both the print and online version. It's that thing where they give the title of the book, and then parenthetically they put the cost and the publisher and the page count or whatever. And so, you know, Rick Emerson, who is teamed with CNN economic reporter Lisa Desjardins, for Zombie Economics, A Guide to Personal Finance, and then parenthetically it said, you know, publisher pages cost. It says, Avery Trade, $18, 304 words. So I apparently have written a Dr. Seuss book. I've written a Richard Scarry guide to managing your finances.
Well, you know, there are a lot of worksheets in that book.
Yeah. Well, you know, as James Joyce would tell you,
a lot of illustrations.
It's really about finding the right order to put the words in. That's where the line, God is in the details. It really is, it's a game of inches at some point, you know, and it's an economy of language that we operate with. 304. Although I have to say, though, really, I mean, you know, 304 words, if one were looking at this in a relative sense, I mean, that would actually make my advance of like Joe Esterhazian proportions if I really had been paid for just 304 words. So anyway, but that has been changed online. But if you see that in the print edition, yes, we have noticed that. And by we, I mean listener Chris, who I think snarked at them at like 6:01 this morning via email that they had gotten that wrong. But anyway, so thank you to Mr. Andy Kritza for writing a very nice piece about zombie economics. You can read that in the New Willamette Week, and I have handily linked to that like every single place there is to link to anything on my page. So you can find out more about that. Let's see. What else? Well, I guess that's it. So I think that's all I have, except that, again, I went to bed at... You know, late, and then I woke up at 7 o'clock this morning. I get this whole thing. I'm now on my third day in a row of just no matter when I go to bed, and it's always late because I stay up late, and then I usually would get up at like 9, 9:30, something like that, unless I head out like Portland. I'm now on my third day in a row of just like George Jetson style. It's like where I do everything but get flung out of bed like a toaster pastry. It's like at 7 a.m., my eyes just go, and they just open like steel shutters after a nuclear attack. They just whang, and then I'm just awake. So I don't know why that is, and I don't know when that's going to stop happening. But so, you know, at 7 o'clock this morning, it just became clear to me that I was not going to be getting back to sleep. So, you know, I'm just awake. So I took the opportunity, by the way, to finish Twilight Eclipse. So I'm not done with that. Totally caught up. Just in time, by the way, to see the teaser poster come up for Twilight Breaking Dawn. Just to be real clear about this, I don't really care that much about like any of these. It just happened to be sitting there. It was like that day that I woke up early and so I watched Jade with David Caruso. Because I realized that I'd owned it and I'd never watched it and it was just sitting there. You know, and it's like, you know, Netflix took the trouble to send it to me. I might as well do them the favor of watching it. So Twilight Eclipse, first of all, is pretty bad. That's it's not a good... Can I just tell you this about Twilight Eclipse? Here's the one thing they could do to make that movie, I mean, at least incrementally better. If the wolves were not, like, the size of, like, you know, aircraft carriers, that might actually impart some tiny bit of in-universe realism to the whole exercise. If things just had, like, any kind of, like, realistic proportion or scale at all, and I'm not just talking about, like, how everybody seems to be impossibly buff. I'm talking about how, like, I can buy almost more easily the fact that a guy can, like, shift his cells around and transmogrify into a wolf than I can buy... This is like the whole thing of Megatron. Back when Megatron used to turn into a gun instead of whatever the hell he turns into now. I don't even know what the hell Megatron turns into now. Don, what does Megatron turn into now? Because he's not a gun anymore. He turns into like, I don't know. Like a tea cozy or something. It's like something totally pussy and emasculated.
It's microwave oven or something. I have no idea.
He turns into a rotisserie. Just... So, like, everybody can come back after a big melee against the Autobots, and they can carb load on corn dogs.
He's one of those gyro rotator things for
with
the lamb.
With a leg of lamb where they just carb a Starscream. Who wants thin sliced? That's not what Starscream really sounds like, no. But that's the best I can do. But, you know, at a certain point, he quit turning into a gun because we're all just a nation of idiots, you know, and we can't be trusted, you know, to have a toy gun without going and, like, shooting somebody in the face with a real one, like, 10 years later. But there was this whole thing in the Transformers where Megatron, who, again, stood shoulder to shoulder with all the other Decepticons, and then he would turn into a gun, and a handgun at that. He would turn into a pistol, and then he would be held in Starscream's hand. So it would be like if you turned into, like, a pistol, and then I just picked you up. And it's like, well, how does that work?
Well, how do giant robots turn into normal-sized cars? I have problems with the physics of the entire universe.
Well, no, see, I can buy that, though, because... Okay, no, now listen, though.
Where do the parts go?
Okay, no, but... No, but if I took your car apart and laid those parts end-to-end, it would be, like, 5 miles long. I mean, they're all tucked inside and full. Your intestines fit inside you, and you get, like, 10 miles of them.
Yeah, but it would be, like, one skinny straw if you wanted to, like, one just straight up and down, like, thing about 3 inches wide if you want to make something as tall as one of the Transformers.
I hate to be Commander Obvious here, but the reason you know that that works is because the actual Transformer toys turn into a robot and then back into a car.
Yeah,
it works like in point of fact.
But they don't turn into the same size that they do in like the movies and the TV show. They turn from a gigantic robot into a normal sized car that a human can drive, and then back to a gigantic robot.
You're saying that robots can't crouch, basically.
It's not a matter of crouching, it's a matter of mass and volume.
No, because that implies that... never mind, this is just becoming dangerously...
It's like if I took this entire building and it transformed into a school bus. Where would all the parts go? You couldn't transform this building into a school bus.
It's just not cool.
Who wants to play with a building?
Yeah, see what I did there? This is another one of those shows where you've just become like somebody's SNL sketch of this show. We've just become like an idiotic, retarded parody of ourselves.
I'm sitting here responding to an email, by the way, with a guy wanting me to explain to him how it's possible that humans have free will.
Oh, I know. I saw that email. I chose to... You know, I exercised free will and I deleted it.
I looked at it and then I put it away. Then I looked at it again, then I put it away. And then I... crap.
No, you can't. No, no, no. I saw that and I went, well, let's test it. Delete. Hey, it works. but my whole thing is I can almost buy that a guy can shift his cells around manimal style and become a wolf. Except it's like... Tyler Lautner, who, as buff as he might be, is only like 5'7" or something, and then he becomes a wolf that's like the size of a battleship.
Yes, like the Transformers and the cars. It makes no sense.
So that's a thing. It totally took me out of the experience. But if you see, so I don't really care about it all that much. But let's have no illusions. I will see the final one just so I can be done with it. I'll see Twilight Breaking Dawn just so I can be finished, just so I can be wrapped up. But have you seen the poster for it? Have you seen the teaser poster that's come out?
No, but I am kind of looking forward to this because I have not read the final book, but I read a synopsis of what happens in the final book, and it is so insane that I'm actually looking forward to seeing how they try to make it into something that's even remotely watchable in a movie.
Yeah, Lara read it. She said the same thing. She was like, she read the entire series because she's a completist. And she's like, once she started, and she got halfway through the second book, and she's like, this is crap. But she had to finish it. And she said the same thing. If you get a chance at some point today, it's not like terribly important, but if you find yourself on the net at like Ain't It Cool or, you know, any of those sites or like, you know, like Joe Blow's movie site or whatever, just take a look at the teaser poster. And I know it's just a teaser poster, so it's not like floating heads in the foreground or anything. But it's like they just know they don't even have to try. I swear to you, I'm not exaggerating. It's just a picture of a sunset or, you know, of a sunrise. And there's nothing happening. There are no characters. Nothing's going on. No one from the film is visible. There's nothing unusual about it. It is literally just like a badly... I don't even think it's a photograph. I think it's like a badly done, like watercolor of a sunrise. And then in that spiky lowercase font that just says Twilight Breaking Dawn. That's it. It's like they know that that movie is a self-perpetuating, money-creating machine. And that's all it is. And so Harry Knowles, of course, was just... he did what he always does. He just like spilled his essence all over it, just talking about what a, you know, what a strikingly and blazingly stripped down and powerful image it was. It was just, it's just a picture of, it's just a badly done picture of the sun coming up. It's awful.
Yeah, on the MTV Hollywood Crush blog, the blogger Kat Rosenfield writes, said, have to get their initial reactions were, what's with the trees? Where are the vampires? Why are there no shirtless Lautners on this poster?
Anyway, so I did that and so forth and blah, 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 blah. All right. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It is 2 o'clock. Later on this hour, we got your Clergy Watch Democracy in the March. We'll talk to Anna Griffin from The Oregonian, and we'll do the aforementioned headlines. Don't forget, tomorrow we were going to be joined by our good friend Siegfried. He's actually going to be in on Friday, turns out. He's going to be in Welch's because he's working on that show Grimm. So he'll be doing some filming. So he's, I don't know, he's going to be like riding in a hay wagon and, I don't know, filming Solomon Grundy or whatever you do on that show. So he's going to be doing that. That's on,
Do you know anything about what the show's about at all? Okay.
Has it started airing yet?
No.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
All I know is it's a thing and they film it here and I don't know. I have no idea.
But so in just this vacuum, then you inserted a hayride and Solomon Grundy.
Yes. Yes, I did.
Okay.
And that's by the way, that's fairy tale Solomon Grundy, not zombie swamp Solomon Grundy from the comics. Just in case anybody wants to know how my head just rushes in and fills those empty voids of knowledge.
See, and I was thinking of the zombie comic book.
Yeah.
Solomon Grundy.
Well,
in a hay wagon with Siegfried. And that was
singing.
Something I never expected to have in my head.
Singing a song from singing about the Surrey with a fringe on top. So anyway, so he'll be here on Friday to talk about the Zombie Film Festival, which is happening. It's just a one-night thing that's happening this Friday at the Hollywood Theater. It's going to be back-to-back Demons and Night of the Comet. Demons, by the way, in case you haven't seen it, great film. Also the only film that Cheryl Kanakoa had to walk out of, was never able to make it through. So you got to see that. That's this Friday, the Hollywood Theater, which is going to be kind of all decked out for the occasion. It's going to be Demons and Night of the Comet back-to-back this Friday at the Hollywood Theater. Find out more by going to mayofthedead.com. That will be followed then by Guardian Games and their Zombie Game Day, which is happening Saturday, and that will be wrapping up the whole May of the Dead spectacular, which has just had a whole bunch of stuff going on. So that's going to be this Saturday. So again, find out more about all that stuff by going to mayofthedead.com. So that will be Friday that Siegfried will be here, the same day that Big Jim Willig is here. And so forth. And stop. And reset. Okay. So here's the thing that you started to talk to me about between Legion of News and this show, and then I think I was working on a thing, and then also I figured that we would get totally sidetracked. So I don't know any more about this than what you've already told me. But all I know is that you are you moving? Are you getting ready to move? You're not moving from your apartment today.
The thing is, I don't know. I don't know what's happening. Our lease actually comes up the end of this month. And we were considering moving, but we hadn't really looked for a place. And there's an apartment complex that is very, very close, like, you know, two blocks.
Like in the same, it's not another building in the same complex.
No, it's a complex that's only about a mile away, but it's like two blocks from where Patrick works. And we went and we looked at an apartment that's, you know, it's not as nice as the place I live, because I live in a very nice apartment complex. I also live in the most expensive apartment complex in the area. And we went and we looked at this other place. It's not as nice as ours, but for an apartment that is roughly the same size as what we're in now, it would be like about $400 a month less. And so there is one apartment open like right now. So it's kind of like we did that whole thing where we're going, okay, well, we filled out an application and taking it there today, and then we're going to see. And if they turn around and they go,
are they going to be running a credit check on you?
Yes. Oh. Yes, running the credit check. And if they go, sure, you seem like someone that would be okay for to live here, which we have no idea or not. You know, somebody else might apply for it that they like better, or, you know, we may just suck. I have no idea. But if they turn around and they go, why, yes, we'd love you to have the apartment, then it's like, you know, a $99 move-in fee and a $250 pet deposit, and that's pretty much all we have to give them to just get into the place.
When is your lease up?
Our lease is up this weekend.
Wait, so do you have to sign a new lease this weekend?
Yes.
Okay, so, well, we would find out before then, though.
Well, hopefully. We want to try and find out by Friday, and if they're going to give us the apartment, then we're going to move this weekend.
Do you have to give your landlord notice before you leave?
No.
Okay. So, well, if your lease is up, I guess you don't.
Yeah.
All right. So you would then be... Do you have First of all, let's be very clear about the fact that I no longer own a truck. I'm going to establish that right now.
No, we'd have to get like a U-Haul.
Saying it at the outset.
And I'll probably post to like Facebook or something and ask if people want to come over and help us move things for like pizza.
For cookies.
Yeah, yes. For cookies and pizza.
Yes. So that would be, well, how far away is it from where you are?
Like a mile.
Is it on the first floor?
No, it's on the second floor. We're on the first floor now. So this, when we get people to come help us, that would involve moving things upstairs.
Yeah, I don't own a truck. Including that
giant free TV that Mike Russell gave us that weighs like 100 pounds.
Seriously, and here's the thing: as big a cheapskate as I am, the last time Laura and I moved, because we've been in our present place for like 5 years, 6 years, something like that. The last time we moved, I actually just said, if we ever move again, like, which we probably will at some point. I don't know if we're going to get a house ever, but I mean, you know, we'll really move. At some point, we will want to go to a place where homeless people aren't moving their bowels in our driveway. We want to edge up that tiny little bit into the next societal rung. And I said, I don't care, like, if it's expensive. Like, I don't care if we have to cut back on something for months in advance to pay for it. I'm never moving again. I'm never boxing. I'm never packing. I'm never lifting. I'm never stacking or sorting. I'm going to pay some guys to come and move stuff the next time we have to pick up all of our crap and get into a different place.
Oh, yeah, that's very wise.
I'm never doing that again. Seriously, it is just not worth it. It is not worth... That is a thing where I do believe that however much you have to pay for it, I mean, within reason, it is... That is worth it in saving yourself, like, the stress and just anguish and, like, possibly a break in stuff and, like, dropping things on your foot and, like, having to, like... guilt your friends into, you know, remember that time I helped you move, Steve? And then it's like Steve goes, fine, jag off, and just hates you. I mean, because here's the thing, and it's like the understood universal, you know, the currency there is pizza and beer. Mm-hmm. And it's like, and so, you know, you get the pizza, you get the beer, you get the whatever, that you move, and then everybody stops, you have a little lunch, you finish moving, everybody has a beer. But let's be honest, it's still not worth it.
No.
I mean, I don't care what, I don't care, unless the beer is being given to you by some sort of like a Danish milkmaid who's giving you like a full body massage, it's not worth it.
Okay, now, you remember me saying that I was going to be like asking people to help, but that would include like listeners to our radio show, so
well,
you might not want to talk down the helping to move thing so much.
Yeah, but it's a group of people that already give you their money, so it seems like they're predisposed to help you.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, they're fans. They're
basically, what comes down to is if they tell us that we can have this apartment, this is going to be the worst Memorial Day weekend I've ever had.
Yes. Also, it's going to be raining, by the way, just so you know. Apparently, yesterday was the only nice day we're going to have all week. So, and when I say they're fans, I mean they're fans of, you know, they're fans of assisting you. They like to support all things Donnie.
Yeah.
Didn't you mention like the Polidori chocolate site and the guy like 4 seconds later was angry that it wasn't up because he wanted to buy something and give you money?
I know. And that's the other thing is that I have to move and I
like how for you the audience is this sort of stocked pond that you can just fish out of. I need somebody to buy my chocolates. Listeners. Oh. I need somebody to help me move. Listeners.
What's the first thing you see when you go to rickemerson.com? Zombie economics.
Yes. Well, but that's for, you know, that's because Rick Emerson cares and he's trying to give back the gift of financial stability, Don. That's all I'm saying. And let's not equate me putting up a banner ad with you having people come move your stuff. I mean, let's just try to have some sense of rational proportion in these things. All right. So when will you find out about that? Please tell me that Patrick is off giving the documents to the guy, like, right now.
He is, yeah. Yeah, within the next hour, he'll be dropping off the documents.
So the guy can scan his, like, credit-denying phone app over it and just go, ooh, I'm sorry, it looks like we've got a problem here.
And then the big red light goes off. It goes, beep, 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 then... Awooga. There's this big siren.
It's like he's putting some sort of financial luminol on your credit report, and there's just stains all over it. And he goes, ooh, something bad happened here.
Yeah. Well, I told Patrick it was unlikely, but it's like he wanted to roll that dice.
Yeah. Well, no, you don't have to pay anything to.
Yeah, you do. You have to pay for the credit report.
Oh, really? Because, see, that is a thing that did not always used to be the case. There were times when you would go and it was either, they would either comp you the credit report or it would be reimbursed to you you know, depending on how it turned out.
Yeah, the place I'm living now, they didn't charge us for the credit report.
Yeah, so that's, I think,
especially since they don't have to even actually send away for it or anything anymore. They just look it up on the computer.
Oh, well, I mean, but that's the idea that somebody doesn't have to work for something to... Look, here's the thing. I've had no problems with AT&T being my iPhone, you know, my service provider. And everybody bitches about AT&T. And as somebody noted, and I really think this is true, I think AT&T and their iPhone service, I think that is a thing. I think that is the new post office where it's a thing that you're just supposed to complain about because you do.
Yeah.
And like, just like I've never really had that much of a problem with the post office, I haven't had any issues at AT&T. But I will say this, that when I was going to New York and I had to have my, and there was no internet access, no Wi-Fi at my hotel, which just wasn't going to work. And I turned my iPhone into a personal hotspot, which was glorious, by the way, and worked flawlessly. And is like one of the best things I've ever used. But that was the thing where I called them and literally all the woman had to do was do like a single keystroke. I mean, I think Thomas described it as like, you know, like turning a zero to a one somewhere on my account. And then it was like, bam, $29,
yeah.
You know, and it was, you know, like pressing a button that just said like on. And also not using like a whole lot more data than I probably was already. So, you know, that is a thing with the credit report where they just do it because it's a cabal.
Yeah.
Because it's a racket and you have to use them.
Yeah, you have no choice.
I mean,
it's like, well, I don't want to pay you for the credit report. Well, then you don't have to file an application to try and get this apartment.
I mean, and that's the thing. And it's like, you know, and that's the thing that I think everybody sort of is aware of, that like the credit, I mean, the credit system in this country is just like that. You want to talk about like a business to get into if you're going to start your own nation somewhere. If you can't get into like casinos or whores or heroin, it's like running the credit industry, because that is, I mean, they are like the gatekeepers of all. And even as much as you hear about like people, you know, being able to buy houses who had like no credit at all. It's funny, for an industry that apparently just doesn't care who they ultimately give stuff to. They sure make you go through like a lot of hoops to get into a position where they will then let you get something you obviously can't afford.
Yeah,
it's like they get you both ways. It's like they just screw you nine times out of ten, on the journey by having to fill out a lot, you know, by having to submit things and having to pay, you know, a lot of submission fees to have your report and then to resubmit it and then to have it checked and to have it verified and whatever. Just so they can ultimately like get you on the hook for something that you're not going to be able to pay for regardless. I mean, that really is just, that is a racket like nobody's business, the credit industry. So, I mean, all right. What are we doing? Well, we should do, do you have anything else? Is there anything else notable? Is there anything I've missed? Anything I've overlooked? Anything I've forgotten? Anything else going on in your life that the people want to hear about?
I don't think so. We got the, as we mentioned, the chocolate business. So, again, polydorychocolates.com. Go buy stuff.
I'll put an ad up for that.
I'm poor. And also, I think you were going to give me a hard time about equating African women with plastic bags.
No,
don't want to go into that, really.
I think that's self-evident.
Yeah,
I would say that's fairly reflexive. I think if people need to have that explained, that's probably not a thing I can explain.
I equate Irish men with paper bags.
Because they both contain bottles of alcohol?
Exactly.
Really? Is that why?
Yes.
I was just figuring that out of my head.
Actually, after I said that, I wondered, what would I mean by that? And then I thought, because you put beer in them.
Yeah, there you go. Tell me I can't figure out ethnic stereotypes on the fly. Let's see.
Problem solved.
One holdover from last hour. We were talking about this animatronic dinosaur park where one of the dinosaurs caught on fire, which is awesome. Listener Bill says, by the way, Enchanted Forest is in Turner, Oregon. Wild Waves is located in Federal Washington, just in case you cared. He thinks apparently I was confusing the two.
Oh.
So I guess I don't know where Turner, Oregon is or why I would have passed it, but I remember passing Enchanted Forest when I was a kid. Or maybe I just saw
Enchanted
TV commercials.
Enchanted Forest is down kind of by Salem.
I might have just
between
seen,
here and Salem.
Well, my grandparents lived in Salem for a while, maybe I just saw TV commercials for it, like because we get a lot of Portland channels or whatever. So, and then there's Wild Waves, which is in Federal Way, which is a horrible place, by the way. Federal Way, which is just another one of those, it's just like another one of those Bellingham towns where you're just like, why does this exist? Why do people live here?
In California, in the LA area, we always had commercials all year round for Santa's Village.
Yeah.
Which was this place that had Santa. And my parents would never take me there. And I realized, I look back, and it was like she always had a reason to not go. Like, in the winter, we weren't going to go because, you know, it was in Lake Arrowhead, the roads were slippery, and it was just going to be packed full of people. So it was just going to be a nightmare and horrible to go during the Christmas season. in the summer when they would go, come on down to Santa's Village. We're still open. You can still see the reindeer. You can do stuff. She'd go, well, you don't want to go to Santa's Village in the summer.
Of course.
That's, you don't see Santa in the summer. And so then I'd wait. And then the next season, Christmas would come around. Like, oh, no, it's too snowy. The weather's too bad. So I never, ever, ever got to go to Santa's Village until I was an adult. And I made my first husband go with me. And we got there. We drove all the way out there. And it was closed.
It was... Sorry, folks. We're closed for 2 weeks.
So all we got to do was just, like, stand there and, like, look at some reindeer through a chain link fence and then go home.
That's awesome. That's great. The thing about being a parent, especially of small children, is that small children just aren't very bright, and you can just lie to them with impunity. Susan Reynolds, the marketing director at CBS, she, you know, when her children were small, they wanted to go see... Sounds like a joke, but it's true. They wanted to go see Barney on Ice, you know? And that's one of those things where, as a parent, you realize, like, it's your own fault for reproducing. So you are hoist by you, but your own petard. You have no one but yourself to blame. But what she was able to do, though, was that, like, you know, kids are rowdy and they get rambunctious and they get fidgety and so forth. And, you know, and plus all the parents are probably drunk because that's the only way you can tolerate the thing. So they take frequent intermissions. And so, like, at intermission, she's like, show's over. And, like, went and... Because they're like five. They don't know what an intermission is. They have probably never heard the word intermission.
Nope, that was it. Remember, everyone was applauding and the lights came back on. It's over now.
Wasn't that a great time? Let's go. And they, like, the kids just never knew.
And they have no concept of time.
No,
so they have no idea.
They're like goldfish that can walk. They have no sense of anything.
What time are we seeing future Harvard fellow
She's
Anna
calling at 2:30.
Oh, okay.
I believe she is calling today at 2:30. And so we should, we'll do a little bit of a news here. We'll take a break.
Okay.
And we'll come back. Everybody, look over there.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
The 56th Annual Drama Desk Awards, a leading precursor to the all-important Tony Awards, were handed out Monday night in New York with the Book of Mormon once again continuing its dominance. The critically acclaimed musical from the creators of South Park nabbed 5 awards, including ones for Best Musical, Lyrics, Music, Director, and Orchestrations. Also taking home 5 awards was a revival of Carl Porter's Anything Goes, including an honor for Best Musical Revival and one for the lead actress Sutton Foster. The Normal Heart and Bengal Tiger at the Baghdad Zoo, starring Robin Williams, each won 2 awards, while the British import War Horse won the award for Best Play.
Does it seem like it's cheating to have a Cole Porter thing win or, you know, be nominated? I mean, it's...
Well, at least they gave it... They actually have different categories. So it got Best Musical Revival.
Okay. And, well, I guess that is fair.
Book of Mormon got Best Musical. Right. So other acting awards went to Bobby Cannavale for The Mother with a Hat. Mother with the Hat. Oscar winner Frances McDormand for Good People and Norbert Leo Butz for Catch Me If You Can. Edie Falco won Best Featured Actress for a play in her performance of The House of Blue Leaves alongside Ben Stiller, and a special ensemble award was given to the cast of The Normal Heart, a revival co-directed by Joel Grey.
So, Joel Grey, another news, Joel Grey still alive.
Yeah.
Wow.
Welcome and bienvenue.
You know, here's a weird thing about Joel Grey. If you go back and watch Cabaret with Joel Grey, it's when did the weird homoerotic greased up pecs transformation of the MC happen in Cabaret? Because Joel Grey is very like, he's just very like spooky and
he's just creepy,
sexless almost, and he's just sort of, you know. Maybe sexless is the wrong, but he's just creepy.
Well, Alan Cumming played it that way when he did the revival of Cabaret a few years ago.
Is that where the switchover happened with Alan Cumming?
Well, he was. What do you mean?
From being asexual. I never saw his performance that, but being hypersexual.
Kind of, maybe, I guess, yeah. I hadn't really thought about it.
Because I think
maybe.
That was not, and I apologize, I forget the guy's name, who was the MC here when Storm was in it, because he was also Hedvig when that was here.
Was that Wade McCullough?
Yeah, because I know that he himself said that he was not the first one to sort of, you know, he did not have the idea to sort of reinvent the character as being this very, like, very, very, very sexualized and exaggeratedly sexualized character. But that happened at some point, because that wasn't, I don't know.
I mean, there's, you know.
It's a conversation that probably interests almost no one who's listening.
The Joel Grey's performance, I mean, there was a lot of leering, you know, there's the whole two ladies number, which is kind of, but I don't know.
Is it in the film version of Cabaret where because there's been several sort of changes and alterations to that over the years, especially the ending. It's not like I'm some big Cabaret freak or whatever, but it is a bit, you know, but it's been done several different times in different ways. I think it might be the film version, which is where at the end, the MC sort of strips off his tux and he's wearing a stormtrooper outfit underneath. And maybe not. That might have been one of the stage productions of it.
It's been a long time since I've seen it.
And they changed that. That was actually a thing where I think when it was here, at the end, the MC is just shown as being a prisoner of war, and he's got like the Auschwitz suit on or whatever. You know, he's the faded like striped prison thing with like the, then he's got like the pink triangle stuck on him. But I think it might have been in the film version where the MC himself is a stormtrooper at the end, and it just unnerved me like in the deepest, most unsettled way. I don't know why I was seeing so much Liza Minnelli stuff when I was a kid. Insert joke here. But it was just, it always seemed to be like around and like on channels where I don't think it should have been, like where young folk could be watching. Like, why was I watching A Sterile Cuckoo when I was like 9? Like, what is up with me? There's no explanation for that. So Book of Mormon. So this is what award that it just was this nominations or awards?
The Drama Desk Awards.
And it did win?
That's New York Critics, yeah.
And because it was nominated for 14 Tonys, which ties the all-time record, which is itself a tie between Billy Madison and the producers. But it came one shy, I guess, actually, of tying the all-time record for nominations, which itself is astounding. I mean, it's easy to say this now in retrospect, looking back at it, but I think if, like, 15 years ago or 17 years ago, you had said, the guys who made this Cannibal the Musical thing that Lloyd Kaufman is putting out, they're going to be nominated for 14 Tonys. I mean, you can say that now because, like, it's now. I don't think then, that you would have necessarily predicted that was
or
so.
Or even they themselves, when they were making that movie, were going, we're on our way to Broadway.
Yeah, I mean, or just after watching the South Park film, as great as that was, I think I always just sort of thought, like, I think I was always under the impression, and I'm not sad about this, I am not a guy that laments the mainstream success of things that I am into. I am glad that those guys are getting a lot of mainstream recognition, maybe from people who don't watch South Park or aware of it, but don't really watch it or not. Don't traffic in that kind of humor because they've really kept their own voice. They haven't, you know, they haven't changed or modulated themselves in any way. But I think I always just had sort of assumed that they would never be allowed entrance to that to that world. I think I always assumed that they would just the sort of institutionalized nature of theater and especially Broadway would not have welcomed them with open arms. And even with all their financial success, I always figured that there would be a bit of an arched eyebrow and a sort of a not our type.
I have to admit to having, you know, I have the entire cast recording on my iPod and listened to it, and I've listened to it several times. And I have to admit, I'm surprised that they haven't gotten more outrage. I mean, I don't know if it's a reflection of the times we're living in. And, you know, I think that they were absolutely right that Trey Parker was saying that he expected the Mormon Church officially to just take a cool,
right,
you know, take on it, to just go, yeah, well, okay,
they were sort
whatever
of, I think, indifferent to
yeah
the whole thing.
He didn't expect that. But I'm surprised
that Broadway itself,
there hasn't been more outrage, just, you know, angry letters written and people like and guys on Fox News shaking their fists and things, because it is.
It's relentlessly profane.
Yeah, it really, really is.
Yeah.
And I mean, like with a lot of South Park, the message is very egalitarian and even very sweet. You know, ultimately what, you know, the message of the actual piece is, but the songs themselves and the stuff that goes on, you know, from to get you from point A to point Z is, yeah, very, really profane and really, in many ways, yeah, bordering on sacrilegious.
There's that song, F You God,
yeah,
which they lead into that song. And I think I said this on funemploymentradio.com when I got back from New York, having seen it, and I think they had, it was still in previews when I saw, but I think they had locked it. I don't think there were any real changes made after that. But that song is actually led into, I swear to you, this is true, that song is led into by a joke, not a comment, an actual joke about, you know, baby humping. And where that's the laugh line is about a guy like, well, gotta go, hump a baby. And it's like, you know, and that's the punchline to a whole thing, which then leads into this song. And I remember just sitting in the audience and just thinking, what an odd time. Like, I think also with South Park, those guys have actually paved their own way, though, because they're just so vile all the time and have been for so many years. That I think if it was not the South Park guys, I think that there would have been more protests. But I think it's almost like at this point, people go like, you get what you pay for. I mean, it's like, what did, like, you know, we asked the, it's the South Park guys, what did we expect? I mean, I think, but it is surprising that, like, you know what? It's surprising that, like, the Sarah Palins of the world have not glommed onto it.
Yeah.
You know, because that seems like a thing that they could seize, because it is presumably a religious, you know, it's about religion. It's about a real religion. And it's about, you know the hard scrabble, you know, places in the world and, you know, whatever. And it's, you know, but they're using it as an opportunity to make poop jokes a lot of the time. So I'm surprised that they haven't, like, Tea Party and Bill O'Reilly folks haven't latched onto it. But I think they might. My theory about this, because I actually wondered about that, why there weren't protests. Because remember the protests over Dogma? And I mean, Dogma's, in my opinion, just not a very good film. But also there was just all of this, like, outrage over Dogma, that it was, like, you know, sacrilegious. And, you know, he was, you know, and it was not dealing with religion. You know, it was dealing with religion in a sacrilegious manner. And it was,
well, going back
profane.
To Last Temptation of Christ, which there was all this outrage about that, because, you know, it dared to portray Jesus as a guy who actually was considering the idea of continuing life as a man rather than as a martyr.
And people, and there was the thing where, like, screens were slashed and there were death threats and there were whatever. So I remember just sitting there and kind of wondering why the sort of, you know, the extreme right wing, the sort of attention grabbing right wing hadn't latched onto it. And the conclusion I came to is that ultimately those guys are all political realists. And I think they must realize at this point that to a certain degree that picking on South Park is like picking on The Simpsons, that it's so institutionalized that I think the vast swath of America that you need to win an election, you know, the average, and I'm not talking about just like you and me, I'm talking about like the average just Johnny Lunchbucket off the street, you know, just the what did Tim Riley call them? The states where nothing happens, all the big middle of America, the average American sitting there, you know, eating his Olive Garden breadsticks and scratching his ass, that guy loves South Park. And South, he has accepted South Park as part of, as a, and this sounds weird, but that guy probably has accepted South Park as a pillar of American culture in terms of our entertainment, just like The Simpsons. I mean, because it was not too long ago, I mean, relatively speaking, when politicians were actually trying to gain political points by targeting The Simpsons. I remember George Bush, when Bush 41 was running for office in 88, he actually criticized The Simpsons for, you know, for being disrespectful to the idea of the nuclear family and having where the dad is a drunk and strangles the kid. And sure, you shouldn't do those things, I suppose, but he tried to score a lot of political points by railing on The Simpsons, and that was the last election where anything like that happened. I think Bob Dole maybe tried to do it as well, but you never heard that again, because people, some advisor somewhere just said, look, everybody in this country loves The Simpsons. You will score no points. You will lose points if you try to target them, you know, for political gain. And I think South Park is in that same ballpark. It is in the same vicinity. I don't think you can, I think you would lose more than you stood to gain there. But yeah, I will say, and then I believe Anna Griffin is on the phone here, so we'll get to her in just one second. There was a really awkward moment this weekend, though, because Laura had a friend here who lives in Provo, went to BYU, still lives in Provo, but was visiting us, and is still an active member of the church. And of course, you know, there's a lot of talk on the streets of Provo these days about that Book of Mormon play, and it's, you know, there's a lot of tongue wagging and scuttlebutt about it, but of course, like all those things, it's like there's this book that I brought in for Sarah to read that came out a few years ago by a woman named Deborah Lockie called Secret Ceremonies, which was very, very scandalous in Utah, because it was before Big Love or anything like that. It was a woman who had lifted the figurative veil and described what happens in the sealing ceremonies, and she talked about, you know, what it was like, what the temple rituals consist of, which was a huge, huge deal in Utah. And she was like excommunicated and had death threats and whatever. But of course, people are always fascinated by that. And apparently in Utah right now, there's a lot of talk about, like, you know, this Book of Mormon play, and has anybody really seen it? And, you know, what do we think about it? And so this one girl, Michelle, who is really nice, really sweet, but, you know, really Mormon, said, she goes, well, I mean, is it like, you know, but I mean, is it ultimately, and this is the tricky question, she said, is it ultimately like respectful or disrespectful, you know, about religion? And I just had no way to answer that, because it is ultimately sort of like a lot of South Park in the way that really only they can do. It's this big death march of just like a penis and poop jokes. And then in the final like 12 seconds, with this magical skill that only they and Arrested Development possess, they actually have this sort of legitimately, you know, weighty, poignant message that comes across as very sweet and very sincere, which effectively amounts to, maybe it's made up, maybe it's not, but if it makes you happier and makes your world better, then and you're not bothering anybody, then who cares? You know, if it makes you happy and you're not screwing with people, have at it, you know, because life sucks and whatever makes life suck less is good just for that. But it's like, to get to that, you again have to get through like 5 minutes of a song called F You God. I swear to God, this isn't a spoiler, but also a thing about Joseph Smith like having sex with a turtle. So, I mean, and you know, but how do you explain that to like a girl from BYU? Like, well, if you can get past the turtle effing, I mean, sister, you're in. I mean, there's just no way to, you know, nothing. So, all right. I'm going to take a crisp, refreshing swig of this Vizo. You should introduce Anna Griffin, who I believe is waiting on the line. Don Taylor.
Well, now joining us, International Woman of the World, way smarter than both of us, Oregonian columnist Anna Griffin on the phone.
Hello, Anna Griffin. How are you today?
I'm good, guys. What's going on? Just another serious conversation about God, huh?
Well, it's what we do here. We discuss the eternal verities with I like to think, a wit and panache that is sadly lacking in most of your theological discussions these days.
My spouse actually went to see Book of Mormon last night and said it was great and almost as good as the moment when she passed Neil Patrick Harris in the hallway and remembered not to speak to him as if he was the close personal friend that she considers him to be.
Wait, now I saw that, I'm such a nerd, I saw on Twitter that Neil Patrick Harris was tweeting about being at Book of Mormon. He's like, it's awesome. It's the best thing ever. So was she at the performance he was at?
She was. She passed him during intermission. She passed him in a stairway.
Wow. So that's like layers of great.
This is a woman who years ago was in L.A. and waved to this blonde girl in a parking lot outside one of the studios and was really puzzled when the girl didn't wave back, and then remembered later Tina Yethers was not actually a friend of hers, just someone she saw on TV every week.
That's awesome.
So this was a real progress for her. This showed real maturity.
Excellent. So I did actually see, I guess it was a couple days ago, where you were noting that you were filled with, a happy envy, but an envy nonetheless that you were not able to see Book of Mormon this week. So, but you will be, hopefully, you'll get a chance to see it at some point in the near future.
I am stuck at home tending to my children and doing my job, while the spouse is in New York and seeing Book of Mormon, and went to see Pirates of the Caribbean this weekend, and went to see Bridesmaids. And I am not the one in the family who says, you can't go see that without me, because I'm a mellow, forgiving person. But I'm earning points in heaven or whatever you believe in. I'm earning points.
Well, you're earning points for the next time, like, you know, the next time there's some sort of a face-off about what do we rent tonight, or, you know, these two movies are screening at the same time, which one shall we see? That's where you pulled that arrow right out of the quiver.
That would be, we are watching Wrath of Khan for the 25th time tonight. I don't care what you want.
Exactly. In my house, we had to do the one for me, one for you thing, where it was like, if we were going to go see, and there's less of an issue now, we don't see as many things in the theaters as we used to, like a lot of people, but it had to be, you know, you got to choose the movie last weekend or yesterday, and so I get to choose the movie today. And that is such a binary system. Because that way there's no debating, there's no quarreling, there's no whatever. It's like, you know, it's like you chose Words and Music. And so, you know, today we're going to go see, you know, whatever. And then I would, you know, and then I just, you know, and I would, and that way it was such a clean, simple, efficient system. But you, though, your way is actually probably better for you in the long run, because, again, it's like credits piling up on a Starbucks card that you can just use at your leisure. So
much in my house, the way it works is you agreed to spend your life with me and put up with the fact that I'm an insane slob, and therefore I have to watch whatever you want whenever you want to watch it.
Well,
that's my world.
I mean, that is a fair trade-off. I mean, it's not I think so speaking of you traveling and you know and going places and whatever. So we read the press release or the announcement from on Romanesco's page where he talked about it is pronounced Nieman, or it is the Nieman Fellowship.
It is pronounced I believe it's pronounced Super Geek is how it's pronounced.
All I know
is that
there was a guy,
Nieman.
He was going to be going, and he was going to be spending a year at Harvard on, I swear to God, it's had a multidisciplinary study of wit. And that tells you everything you need to know about how glorious and nerdy this is. But so
also, and that you need to make friends with that guy so you can come back and tell us what a jerk he is.
Yeah. So we read this sort of official, the official announcement about it yesterday. But so if so, But what, I mean, in terms that I might understand, like what is it and how did you, I mean, how did all this happen and what is it you're going to be doing?
The official terminology is it is a mid-career fellowship for journalists to go and learn stuff and get better at their craft and take some time to think deep thoughts. Basically, it's like winning the lottery. It's sort of how I look at it. You go and they pay you to spend a year at Harvard auditing classes and acting like a college student, and they bring in speakers from all over the world to talk about journalism and public affairs and interesting geeky stuff, and presumably then you come back and you're better at your job. Or you never come back and you just decide you want to be a college student again for life.
I was going to say, this is really the best of all possible, this is like the confluence of all adult wishes. This is like fantasy fulfillment on myriad levels, because A, going back to college, but as we often say, knowing what you know now, and it's not just college. It's Harvard. Also, you're going to be there basically on somebody else's dime, somebody else's good humor, and then here's the best thing about it is you're actually going to get to do something that I always hear about in the abstract, but that I didn't know if it actually existed or how one ever became part of this. You're going to be part of the much fabled and discussed think tank that always seems to exist somewhere. I never know what that means. It's like, a think tank always just... when I heard that phrase as a kid, it seemed like the most fascinating thing in the entire world. And I pictured sort of like a cross between like the SS Blueback down in the water and the Situation Room in the West Wing. Like it was like a subterranean metal room where everybody hung out.
Whenever I hear that phrase, I think it looks exactly like the War Room in Doctor Strange.
Yeah, totally. That's exactly it. That's sort of what I pictured. So, but you are going to be part
of
it.
Because I kind of feel like I need to go buy a pipe.
Maybe an eye patch,
and also just affect an accent for the entire time. I mean, how would they know? I mean, really, this is your chance to just be. If I were you, I would I'd give yourself like a fake scar and create, and talk about like how you left a lucrative career. You are a journalist, but that's only because you decided that building robotics was incompatible with your own system of morality.
Yeah, who will know? No one will know.
So I gave it brain surgery because I wanted a real challenge.
So is this one of those things where like somebody just died and left $5 billion in a Make the World a Better Place fund?
Yes, that's exactly what it's like.
Wow.
Is it like the Neiman Marcus guy?
It was, I believe it was the publisher or the editor of the, I'm going to look it up. Can I look it up right now?
Sure.
Because I want to get it right. I think it's the Milwaukee Journal, but I'm looking it up. This is the beauty of not being there, is I can pretend to be smart.
Well, and also they're probably going to quiz you on this when you get, this is going to be like a Skull and Bones thing where you're going to have to stand outside in a cemetery, like wearing a plastic bag, and they're going to quiz you on where the money came from.
It does, I will say, my spouse has several times said this feels like we're joining a cult.
So is that now, if I can ask them, is this a thing that everybody, the whole family is relocating, or is this a, are you there for a solid year? Or are you there sporadically? How does it work?
You're there for the academic year. And so we will leave. We'll leave probably in late July because we're gonna do the National Lampoon's reverse direction cross country trip.
Awesome.
And no Wally World, but the same basic idea. And then we'll be back in probably early July next year because the kids are gonna. We pick the kids up and put them in school there for the year.
And is this a thing that they that you sort of toss your name in into the ring for, or do they just some sort of star chamber, floating in a satellite in geosynchronous orbit, looking down, going, that one, Griffin, get me her.
I choose you.
Is it
like a claw?
Do you sort of audition, are they actively always seeking people out for this?
It's an application process. You apply in the winter, and you have to do an essay, and you have to do a study plan, and you have to have letters of recommendation, and it helps know people, and then they take a certain number of those people and bring them to Cambridge to interview. So I went out there at the end of April and interviewed.
And when you say those people, you can just say, that means people unlike Dawn and myself. Yeah. It means a better class of person.
Yeah.
the intelligentsia, if you will.
Yes. How does it feel? Yes. How does it feel to be you? Really? Seriously? I mean, you are now entering just like so many realms of pop culture figuratism. I mean, not only a think tank, but now you're going to be in the, you're going to be in a figurative ivory tower as well. You will be part of the literati.
I suspect I'm probably the only person to ever get this who spent the half hour before her interview rewatching Hellboy 2 to prepare mentally.
It's too bad that
and chill out.
It's unfortunate you couldn't find a way to make that part of your area of study during this year, you know?
Well, and also you want to walk in with that Ron Perlman swagger just to sell the interview.
That was exactly it. If only I had horns that I could file down.
Just sitting there just cleaning your fingernails with a huge knife and just going, "Well, so anyway." So your area of expertise or the area of study is I'm not even going to try to do it from memory, but it has something to do with systemic improvements in communities or in counties and their interdependent interrelational confluence with government or something like that.
That sounds so much smarter than what I think I actually wrote.
Totally bluffing.
Basically, I'm going to go learn about cities and how they have evolved and what are some of the solutions to the problems that a place like Portland faces.
This entire time, are you still looking up where the money came from?
As we're actually having
this phone call, are you actually still like thumbing through a pamphlet somewhere trying to figure out exactly? Because I was going to say
I got it. It was Agnes Niemann. And her husband was Lucius Niemann, who is a newspaper man. And after he died, he owned the Milwaukee Journal. And after he died, she gave Harvard $1 million to create this fellowship program.
And I would imagine by dint of...
And after a while, they began admitting women.
By dint of being named Lucius, I would imagine he also owned a series of silver-topped canes as well. And,
the picture of him, he is wearing a pince-nez. Yes,
is he doing that thing of just like sitting in a really low chair with his cane and his arms stretched out straight?
It's like Mr. Potter.
Exactly like that. So you're gonna be leaving toward the end of July. So, congratulations. I guess we actually haven't officially said that to you. So congratulations, and that is, I mean, it's very, very cool. And I will say this: that I was actually sitting in my chair at home, and I've tried to be more. I try to be better about just sort of monitoring, Twitter kind of throughout the day, just because there's a lot of, you know, like breaking news and stuff happens, and you little bits of, you know, dribs and drabs of information come out, and some of it's interesting and timely, and some of it's not. But to have that sort of running, and you said this thing, you said, well, now I can finally, you know, reveal why I've been grinning, you know, like a silly fool for the last 3 weeks or whatever. So, and I know that, and I know that you've gone through like a kind of a hectic last couple of weeks anyway. So
really lousy couple of weeks, yeah.
I mean, the fact that you are still here and like have not had some sort of full-on like screaming nervous breakdown, I mean, that's always possible. I mean, it's only like 2:43. That could still happen today. I mean, if you really like, you know, buckled down and got after it. But so, I mean, congratulations on just, you know, kind of making it through the last few weeks and then having this as sort of the way to, you know, to maybe mark the line of demarcation.
I appreciate that. It's been a nice sort of there's this thing, this fantastic professional accomplishment, and then like my dog died and
I didn't.
It's
yeah,
an interesting lesson in perspective.
I was not necessarily going to bring that up, but I will say that now that you've mentioned the tweet, and this is all stuff that you would put on Twitter. This is like in a single post on Twitter. You said something like, you know, spouse just left for a week. I am at home with a cold. Children have lice. My dog has died. I want this week to be over. And it was like there was nothing that I could. I mean, I think I eventually just sent a thing saying like, "Well, that's terrible. I hope things get better." I mean, because there was like nothing I could. There was no Hallmark card for that. They don't really
I'm sorry, the gods hate you.
Yeah, I mean, that's. I was trying to think of like some sort of a. Well, even a stopped clock is right. No. You can't make an omelet without. And there was no aphorism that actually suited all of those events.
Neither a borrower nor a lender be.
I mean, really, I'd say, you know, So that's at least at the end of that tunnel, there is this that you're able to sort of announce. I know that you are busy. You got a million things going on. So, A, I want to thank you for making some time to us, because really, all kidding aside, I know you've got like a jillion things going on right now. Is there anything especially notable or just sort of off the charts important right now that we should talk about, or that you want to mention? I know that there's this whole thing of the guys getting pounded on down underneath the bridge on Sunday. That was sort of the one thing. It was notable to me that Don and I were talking about this yesterday. Is it maybe, I don't know like how the cop shop works around here, but is it notable that happened on Sunday, but it was like a few days before the cops made any statement about it? Is there anything to be read into that?
My sense, Justin, and I haven't been covering it directly, but in sort of reading the coverage and reading the internet traffic, is that it looks like the people who were attacked made some calls to the media, or made some calls to the Q Center, who then made calls to the media, that the cops handled it like the cops would handle anything, and that it was the people involved who made it a public issue.
Is it just
because they considered it a hate crime?
All right, and so that is, but at this point, and that's, it's right now, they're still trying to like find the guys wherever they, you know, then whatever stained mm-hmm. sofa they are undoubtedly dwelling, laminate from the man, you know, before they can sort of start to put the pieces together. It's the thing, and it was the thing that I latched onto like right away in the story was that 8:30 in May is still like. I mean, it's not broad daylight, but I mean, it's not like, you know, it's not like it's a thing that happened in a back alley where there were no witnesses around. I mean, it's, you know, under a bridge or not, 8:30 is still where people around could be seeing it. It really is. That was the thing that surprised me, that shocked me about it.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, it made me feel like a horrible human being, because I am at the point where whenever I hear a story like this, it is hard for me to get over my initial, I wonder if this is actually true. That we've seen so many, and that's certainly by no means suggesting that this is not real, because it sounds horrible and sounds like the kind of thing that's certainly plausible. But there have been so many cases, whether it's the woman in Vancouver,
the acid woman,
threw acid in her own face, or it just, you know, I have this horrible, cynical journalist nature that I immediately look at that and go, well, that doesn't happen in Portland.
Right, right.
But it's distinctly possible that happens in Portland.
Well, I, you know, and we said that too, you know, that doesn't happen in Portland and doesn't happen. I think Robert Wagner, actually, from Cascadia, he said something about it. I won't do it justice, but he put something on Twitter that was actually really great. It was something to the effect of, you know, he said, really, you know, when people say, I'm surprised this happened in Portland, he said, you're like, it's 2011. Like, you should be surprised and pissed off that it happened like anywhere, you know, because you would think that, you know, after X thousands of years, you know, that we would all just have come to a consensus on certain things, just being, you know. And again, we like to think, I think, in Portland of ourselves as being more, you know, whatever, more cosmopolitan or progressive or whatever the phrase is. But it's, you know, who knows?
I think as a culture, we have come to a consensus on the fact that you don't beat somebody up because of who they love. And I think that, I actually do think that is a consensus. I think what's more disturbing for me is kind of the underlying, if we don't respond with outrage to something like that,
right.
What happens in 2012 when gay marriage is back on the ballot in Oregon?
Right. Well, so we don't end this on a big, you know, on a big downer or whatever. I walk.
The world is a wonderful place. No, really, it is.
Everything's
great.
I walk blindly into this, not even knowing what the answer to this is. What is coming up in the Oregonian, Anna Griffin, that people ought to be reading about?
Oh my goodness. I have a really interesting story running in Friday's paper about a tiny little piece of land in Northeast Portland that a coalition of community groups and students at an elementary school and a middle school in town are working to turn into a community garden. That in addition to just doing the work in the garden, the students have spent several months now learning about the history of Northeast Portland and learning about gentrification and redlining and the Danforth floods and generally learning sort of the more complicated and sometimes uncomfortable history of Portland that at that age you're really not used to being shown.
That is the thing that I am. That is the thing that I am wholeheartedly in favor of. I mean, really, if I forget, it might have been my wife and I, we were talking about that book, which I think is just celebrating its 20th anniversary, that Lies My Teacher Told Me book, which I read when it came out, which was a real, you know, not necessarily a revelation, but which was the first time that I'd seen a lot of that stuff sort of put down in print so succinctly, the idea that it's not even that we are given disinformation in schools, It's just a question of what you're taught and what is sort of left out. And there's so much that I was taught in school and that they teach now that isn't actually bad, just seems irrelevant to your actual life. And I would have sacrificed about half the stuff that they taught me in school if I had learned more about the history of the actual society and culture in which I live, and not just the bad, weird, uncomfortable stuff, just all of the jillion shades of history that sort of come together in your city or in your county or your state. So I am Rick Emerson is a fan of that. So
the Rick Emerson seal of approval.
Exactly. Rick Emerson likes this. All right. Well, I will let you get back to your day. Again, congratulations, from all of us. And we've had a lot of listeners who have emailed and said the same thing. So we're so proud of you. We just want you here so we can just pinch your cheeks and then send you out the door with an apple.
I'll come in a couple weeks and we can film the cheek pinching.
Awesome.
Okay.
All right. Enjoy your week. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
Anna Griffin from the Oregonian, ladies and gentlefolk. All right, there you go. Fantastic. Wait, hold on. Skype is asking me, how would I rate the overall quality of this call? Excellent. All right, there you go. Okay.
Let me take a bit of a breather, a little break.
By breather, do you mean peer?
Yes, and okay. Also to go get my water bottle out of the kitchen. Yes.
Someone notes her week sounds like a Hank Williams Sr. song. Yes, yes, it does. All right, well, we'll do this. We'll come back on the other side. Still to come, we get your clergy watch, Democracy in the March, and so forth. So stay there. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Somebody asked me about Book of Mormon, so we'll do a little Book of Mormon music here. And so forth. And we'll be back after this. So don't go anywhere. It's the Rick Emerson radio program here on the Emerson News Network. Stay there.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Hello, my name is Elder Price, and I would like to share with you the most amazing book. Hello, my name is Elder Grant. It's a book about America a long, long time ago. It has so many awesome parts, you simply won't believe how much this book can change your life. Hello, my name is Elder Green. I would like to share with you this book of Jesus Christ. Hello, my name is Elder Young.
Hello,
did you know that Jesus lived here in the USA? You can read all about it now.
Hello,
in this nifty book, it's free, no, you don't have to pay.
Hello,
hello. My name is Elder Smith, and can I leave this book with you for you to just peruse?
Hello!
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 I'll just leave it here. It has a lot of information you can really use. Hello!
Hi!
My name is
Jesus Christ.
You have a lovely home.
Hello!
It's an amazing book.
Bonjour!
Hola!
Ni hao!
Me llamo Elder White.
Are these your kids?
This book gives you the secret to eternal life.
Sound good?
Eternal life. It's super fun.
Hello.
And if you let us in, we'll show you how it can be done.
No thanks.
You
sure?
Oh, well. That's fine.
Goodbye.
Have fun in hell.
Hey now.
You simply won't believe how much this book will change.
This book will change
your
life.
This book will change your life.
This book will change your life.
Hello, would you like to change religions? I have a free book written by Jesus.
No, no, Elder Cunningham. That's not how we do it. You're making things up again. Just stick to the approved dialogue. Elder, show it!
Hello!
Hello!
My name is
Elder Cunningham!
And we would like to share with you this book of Jesus Christ.
Hello!
Hello!
Door.
Hi, ho!
Just take this book.
It's free.
For you and me.
See, you simply won't believe how much it's free. It changes book.
Hello.
It changes
book.
It changes book.
To the Emerson News Network.
You try to play cool like you just don't care, but soon I'll be playing in your underwear. I'm like a mage with a magic spell. You come like a dog when I ring your bell. I've got the money and I've got the fame. You've got the odds to ride on my plane. You're giving me all that I desire, 'cause down with me, I'm taking you high. I'm the baddest of the bad. I'm the best that you've ever had. I'm the tops, I'm the pain. All the girls get up when I sing, yeah. I'm the meanest in the place. Step up, I'll mess with your face. I don't care where you are. Look up and follow the star.
Oh, I'm gonna tear down the wall. I may
thank you.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
The Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It's 503-505-6964. If you would like to be part of today's program via the telephone. Hey, did I hear you excoriating his tooth? Did I hear you upbraiding Patrick for having for giving someone your cell phone number?
Well, when he was in the hospital and we were like arranging all of his medical things and stuff, I was giving everyone my phone number. I gave the doctors my phone number. I put my phone number on the admission stuff and things like that. And the thing is, it's now been 6 months or something, however many, you know, it's 5 months since that happened. That was December.
Right.
But somehow, like, that triggered something in his head that said that everything that we do together should be officially, they should get my phone number.
Well, it seems to make that easier for at least one of you.
Yeah, except for the fact that I now get phone numbers for people wanting to, like, you know, remind
take
him
out your pancreas
that he has a doctor's appointment.
Yes.
I get a phone call from the woman at the apartment complex that he went to yesterday and talked to them because we're applying there. And I get, hi, I'm calling for Patrick. Just wanted to tell him, you know, give me a call if you're still interested in that apartment. And I'm like, give them your own phone number. You have a phone.
That was actually the part of the conversation that interested me the most, because you often describe Patrick as being like a big dog, and it's, you know, in a good way, but it was almost, it was like, it did sound very much, it was like that mom tone, like you were like one step away from just like pinning a note to his sleeve or something, or just, because Patrick more than, I'm not saying I don't see why you say he's like a big friendly dog, but to me it's almost that he just seems like, he almost just seems like water just running down a sidewalk, that he'll kind of find like whatever the easiest, you know, sort
yes.
of like
yes.
the first path or crack or opening to take him, to, you know, to you know, electricity just wants to get to the ground,
right.
Water just wants to get out to the gutter, and it'll take the first path it sees,
yeah.
Even if it really should be waiting until it's down there by the drainage culvert.
He's a very intelligent man. He is really, really a super intelligent man, but he's very linear. And so there are certain things that, like, you know, he will never, and I'm just finally starting to, he will never learn, for example, that if he's picking something up to put it away, like, in another part of the apartment, to pick up, like, two other things and take it with him.
While he's doing it, yeah.
Yeah, he just, it's like, I'm doing this one thing that's right in front of me now. And it's, you know, and it's like, yeah, kind of like a dog will get that thing of, like, if I do this, I get a cookie. I will just keep doing this. And so it's like, well, I guess we give everyone Don's phone number for things now. I will always give everyone Don's phone number. And that's as far as the logic train goes.
Well, because he's acting in a Newtonian fashion. He has not been acted upon by an outside force, and so he is continuing on his trajectory unimpeded. You know, he would, and I think probably if you didn't actively, like, if you didn't actively make him stop giving your phone number to people, he would probably just do it until one of you is dead.
Yeah.
You know, he, like, 50 years from now, he would be going, well, you want to call Don for that,
yeah.
You know, because, you know, why not? It's just, it seems to be,
yeah,
working out, so.
Because that's the thing is, when I was on there, you probably heard, it's like, why did you give them my phone number? He's like, I don't know. He has no idea. He's just like, I don't know.
Awesome.
Same reason when I say, you know, would you take this to the kitchen? You know, he picks up the dishes off the dining room table and takes them. He takes them to the kitchen. He doesn't scrape the old food into the sink. He doesn't rinse
them off.
Because
you did not ask him to do that.
I did not specify, and then this and this and this. But if I do, that's the other thing, though, is if I do specify too many things, do this and then this and then this, he goes, whoa, 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 whoa. That's too many things. And so it's like, okay.
So he can kind of hold one or two thoughts in his head.
Right.
He can juggle one or two balls at the
same time.
Right.
You know. We joke about the fact that if he's going to the store, if we like pull up to the store, he's going to run in to buy like three things. If I add one thing to the list, he just goes, Oh, no.
Too many things.
That's four things.
We've decided
he can remember three things.
Which is great, because they say that the average human is able to hold seven distinct concepts or ideas or things in their head at any given time.
No, not him.
Okay.
No.
I'm telling you, this is what that grocery app is made for. It's made for couples like you. Because that way, while he's in the store, you can just add stuff to his grocery list while he's walking around. And then send him text going, look at the grocery app now.
We had this conversation, I swear to God, the other night, because we were getting supplies to make cookies for big-ass sandwiches. I was in the bedroom, and he was all the way down the hall in the kitchen. And I said, I need you to check. Tell me, let me know how we're doing with the flour and the sugar. Let me know if we're good with flour and sugar. So he's down there, he's doing something, and he goes, yes. And I said, so we have flour and sugar. He goes, yes. Okay. So he comes back from the store and he goes, and he was like all proud of himself. I remembered to buy flour and sugar. You didn't put it on the list. I said, well, that's because I asked you if we had it and you said yes. He said, no, you asked if we needed it. And I said, yes, we need to buy it. And I said, no, I said, do we have them? And he's like, well, my answer was, yes, we need some.
So you were asking him one thing, and he was answering something altogether different.
Right.
All right.
Instead of saying, no, we don't have any, he was saying, yes, you need to put it on the list.
Is it hard to live in your house? Is it just like, I mean, do you just...
You have no idea.
I was going to ask if it's just like work. If it's just a struggle every day, like if you just burn thousands of calories just trying to convey concepts.
I don't know if I told you this or not. I found this packet that they had sent home with him from his clinic that he goes to, and I'd never seen it. I just saw this like last week, and I opened it up, and in one of the things that was in this packet was one of these little whiteboard things with magnets on the back that you put on the fridge that has the doctor's phone numbers, and emergency numbers, all that stuff, and it has a little black pen because it's like a dry erase board. And so I just wrote on it, "Don't be retarded." And so now, whenever I get annoyed with him, I go, remember what it says on the fridge.
What is your action item for today? Don't be retarded. That is A1. You are planning that item forward for all subsequent days until it is removed from your overall mission statement. Don't be retarded. They ought to just make that as a preset. You ought to be able to just buy a dry erase board that always has that at the top of like, or like a planner that has that at the top of every page. Today, don't be retarded. Right.
Okay.
Awesome. Got it. Crap. You know, you just see the guy there with like a blowtorch and, you know, and like, and it's just a blowtorch and a bunch of, you know, and a bunch of gas cans, you know, and just going, oh, I guess, okay, no, not that.
On the other hand, though, you'll recall Scott Landerville warning me that my tire was perilously bald and might explode or something.
Yes.
We went to go to work first thing this morning. Patrick had to be at work at 7:45, and we were almost ready to go. And he went out to the car for something, and he came back, and he's like, it's a good thing I went out there because our tire is flat. Apparently, it had just decided overnight to go, and I give up.
This is the old tire.
Yes, the old tire, the one that was perilously.
Well, because the steel belting was showing.
Yeah. So last night during the night, it just went much like my laptop did. It just went.
No.
No.
Yeah. Well, that's
So Patrick was awesome. In like 10 minutes, he just went out and whipped the thing off, and because he apparently with his job they deliver things all the time, he's the go-to guy to fix.
Oh, for putting a spare
for
on.
Putting a spare on. So yeah. So 10 minutes, it was like whoop. He whipped off the old tire. He got the spare on. Everything.
That's why you keep him around.
So that was really nice.
Now you should have him carry one of those like little jugs of rum, or like a cask of rum around his neck, you know, with maybe like a slip of paper with your vital information on it. And then you'll be set. You'll be fine no matter what happens. You'll be good to go. Excellent. I was going to do a thing here, but I forget what it was. Oh, but I will say real quickly, not nagging me, but you've been mentioning this as a thing, because every time I bring up the bank, you've been asking me about this because I haven't done it yet. Because you were mentioning sorry, we're doing the thing where we talk about apps. Just everybody's going to be okay with that. But you were talking about that app you have that you can just like point it at your prescription bottle and go like, need more pills of this variety, and getting more pills, and then it just tells the pharmacy like, get more of this.
It goes barcode. Sure, there you go. Ordering your pills.
And then the pills are just.
Speaking of Patrick.
Is it Patrick?
Yes. Why is he calling me 310? He knows better than that.
Well, let's find out.
Oh, should we? Okay.
Yes, you should.
Thank you for calling the Rick Emerson Show. Your phone call is being recorded for posterity. Yes. It's a Nissan Sentra. Yes, our car is a Nissan Sentra.
Wow.
You're welcome. I can't tell you the license number because it's parked around the corner. Okay. Bye.
Okay, so now this is funny because it came right on the heels of him being able to fix a spare tire like that, and yet when somebody asked him what kind of car you own, couldn't quite place it.
Well, there were a couple of things I filled out. I have better handwriting than he does, so I filled out the application for the apartment complex.
Yeah.
But there were a couple of things I couldn't fill in because I couldn't remember what our license number was on our car. So he was supposed to do that, you know, when he went downstairs.
Sure.
Before he left. Apparently he didn't do that. So now he was calling. Not only could he not, but he also, he didn't know the license number of the car.
But also didn't know what kind of car you own.
Also did not know what kind of car we own.
Okay.
And, and so forth. Yes.
And I swear, and by the way, not that I should have to make this observation at this point in the show's history, but that really wasn't planned. That's a thing that just happened.
Yes, it did.
Just now.
I think I'll turn my ringer off.
Wow. Awesome. And that it happened with him actually calling during and interrupting the show during which, you know, presumably you would not be answering anyway.
No, he knows better.
Because I always tell him, I'm like, you can call during the show, but I'm not going to answer because I'm not going to hear it because it's going to be turned off. So. Well, anywho, we'll get some stuff done here, and then you got to get out of here in a bit to do Ham-Fisted Radio. But I will say that, so talking about that grocery app, which, and every time I mention it, people ask me what it is. And I make no money off this. I'm just telling you the name of the, this is not what I was going to talk about, but that every time I mention it, someone emails me and goes, so what's that grocery app?
Yeah, I have one that's just a list, but I don't have anybody to share with like you do.
This is called Grocery IQ. Mm. It just sounds like it sounds grocery. IQ, and it works cross-platform because Laura has an Android-based phone. So, and you sign up, and the you know, and it's free and whatever. But you get a username and a whatever, and then you add a user to it, and then from then on, it's yeah. And then yeah. So the setup is not as smooth as it should be. They may have fixed that, but yeah. But then you can just add stuff to it. So if I'm at the store and she realizes she needs something, she can just stick it on the list, and then it appears, you know, and it's which is awesome. But you know what? I finally used this morning. I deposited a check using that thing from Chase, where I just like took a picture of it. And then it was just creepy and awesome because I already use one of those for so I have an app that is similar to that, you know, for just like for some of my other financial stuff, which is sort of which here's the
he's calling again.
Oh, this is OK. No, you should really.
Should I take?
Yeah,
this?
Well, yes.
Hello.
Oh, dear.
Okay, why don't you just go ahead and I have to give him my driver's license.
All right, well, I'll just
mute my thing.
Okay. So, yeah, so anyway. Hey, how's it going? Yep. Yeah, I'll just, Somebody's asking if I'm also angry at the Hulk because the Hulk becomes larger than he ought to, given his original body size. If I'm angry at the Hulk because of my whole thing about being confused by how Megatron is able to shrink himself down. That's radiation. It does that. It's the friendly atom. The hello, Don.
Okay, I'm not talking to him anymore today.
Did he not know the license number? Well,
he didn't know my driver's license number.
Okay, well, that to be fair. Well, why does
why
oh, is that
know
for
that?
Your application?
Yes,
I see.
And that's my fault because I didn't put his in because I didn't know his, but apparently I didn't put mine in either. So.
Cheryl is noting rather helpfully, this is fascinating radio.
Yeah, isn't it?
Tell me something I don't know.
Woohoo!
Anywho, I don't even know what I was going to say. Oh, but just so real quickly, but I used that thing this morning, which you've been telling me about, which is where you could just take a photograph of the check, and then it just like, it appears in your account or whatever, or, you know, they process it, which is, and I guess I thought it was somehow going to be harder than it was, but I mean, they really do make it for idiots. I mean, it's just, you know, it's like, you know, point the camera at the, line it up so it's inside the blue box. Can you read your own name? If not, take the photo again until the check is not blurry or whatever. And, you know, and then, you know, and you put in your password and everything so it's like, so it's secure. But you do just get this tiny window into how dangerous the world is if you're dumb. Because I was using the Chase thing, which I just installed this morning, but for the longest time, I have had a little app on here to manage some of my other money stuff, like, you know, money that's... I talked about Laura and I trying to find this, you know, like the we determined that really your greatest gain in the world of financial investing is just going to be investing in companies that make things that kill people. So if you can find like some sort of a, like, I was saying that there ought to be like some sort of a horrible, like an ugly American fund that just has like, you know, that just builds like Domino's pizzas, you know, and like liquor distilleries all around the world, and then like sells cigarettes too. And we couldn't find that, but we found Halliburton, which is close. So anyway, but you know, but there's like a little app so you can like and check all of that stuff. But a function on this that I don't use, but that is there at the bottom of the screen, like a single button. And this is, I mean, I guess it's through Fidelity. That's who does it. And so, but there's like a single button at the bottom that I just stay away from because I know it would just lead to bad things for me. And it's that day trading button or whatever. So you could just sit at your desk.
Oh,
and if you,
yeah.
Like if you don't want to play Tetris, you can just, you know, you can just invest your life savings, you know, in like the Yahtzee Corporation or something, which is a thing that. You really do realize, like, that's what they tried, like, when they got rid of online poker with real money, because it's like guys would just be throwing the rent money, you know, away on, like, you know, an inside straight or something. And every now and again, I will just log on through the Fidelity app and just to see what, you know, the status of all my whatevers. And then I'll look at the bottom and it's like the trade button is there. And I think, well, maybe I could just, and I don't, you know, and it's not like, not, I mean, I don't ever just sort of like buy, you know, like invest in something or buy stock or whatever, like on a whim. But you do really see how, like, if you were just dumb, like, the world is a very dangerous place for you now. Like, probably, you know, maybe not now more than in the past. I mean, different thing. In the past, it's you would have been killed by a buffalo if you were an
different.
Idiot.
It's dangerous in a different way.
You would have been gored by something. Here, it's a thing where you can just empty out your bank account, you know, by giving all your money to Planet Hollywood or something, you know. And then later that day realize that that you now have to leave your home. So, anyway, I have no real point there. Let's do a watch, and then we'll get ready to you know, ready break for the day. Don't forget, you can hear Don Taylor along with Sabrina Miller and Bobby Fatboy Roberts and someone else?
Betsy Richter.
Betsy Richter from?
Redoing Media.
Redoing Media. Who are the iPhone sluts?
That's Sabrina Miller and Megan Kate.
Okay.
And I think there's somebody else who does it.
Because I occasionally, that's on before us, I think maybe today on Wednesdays. Because occasionally, like for Legion of News, like I'll just, like in the little box thing, it's just a whole lot of leftover messages that just say, like, you know, I love sluts and like, you know, I heart sluts and whatever. And it's like, I guess that could be for any number of things, but I figured it was probably those guys.
Probably.
So that's coming up today at Cascadia.fm, 4 p.m. Pacific time. And then you can also hear it later on at hamfistedradio.com. All of this, by the way, that you're listening to today, all of this right here, brought to you by Squires Electric. So now here's the thing. We were talking about Patrick, who... Whatever Patrick's challenges in life, he's able to do the spare tire thing, which is a thing that I mean, I probably could do it if I had to, like if my life depended on it. If it was either that or just being, I don't know, just gang raped by gypsy jokers, you know, by the side of the road or something. Like, I could probably figure it out. But I try to know what I don't know. And, you know, sometimes there's a Patrick for the electricity. And that Patrick for the, that is Joe Squires. You know. Except that he does, you know, but he doesn't give the dog butter when you're not looking. I mean, that we know of, I suppose. But you can go to facebook.com/SquiresElectric, or you can go to squiresElectric.com to find out more about them and what they do. You can also call them if you like. That is 503-252-1609. And we mentioned if you go to Squires, or I'm sorry, if you go to facebook.com/SquiresElectric, right now you can see a couple of things. A, you can see that house where the electrical line was knocked down by a tree and then singed some things. There's the creepy melted doll face. There's the snake wrapped around the power box. And then there is a there's a house that they went to. I was going to say they were called by a customer, but I suspect the person who owned the house may now be a customer of the state. But the guy had a grow operation going on with like 100-amp, like homemade. Because I guess you don't want to call, you know, somebody like, hey, I'm growing all these drugs. Can you please come help me out with that? And so that all went poorly later on, and I think they had to go, like, fix everything. So that probably isn't an issue facing you. But, you know, if you are dealing with wires or wiring in your home or business, as they say, or if you maybe moved your business home or you're going to be expanding, you just want to make sure that you pass an upcoming inspection, or just, you know, you're getting ready to, like, you know, it's going to be... it's going to be hot. I mean, not today, probably, or anytime, you know, this year. But at some point, it'll be hot again. And you don't want to, like, turn in your air conditioner and have it, like, blow all the fuses in the building or whatever. So they can handle whatever you got electricity-wise. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. They are Squires Electric at 503-252-1609 or squireselectric.com. Tell me you heard it here, won't you please? All right, here is Don Taylor with something.
Do we have any cheery music to accompany a particularly horrible story?
Yes, we do. Okay. Give me just one second, and I can find that here. Let's see, where is? Yeah, that's right here. Let me just drag that over to beds.
I had some memory that that existed. So.
Yeah, I don't know why. Sometimes I look at things that I've taken off the board, and I don't know exactly why. I don't know why I did that. It's right here. Particularly horrible, you say?
Particularly horrible.
Okay, hold on. Let's give it a second. We have to
trim.
There we go.
All right.
A
truck driver in the Bay of Plenty in New Zealand blew up like a football after a freak accident where compressed air was forced into his body through his left buttock. Stephen McCormick was standing on the plate between the cab of his truck and semi-trailer at a contractor's location on Saturday when his foot slipped. As he fell, he broke the hose off a brass nipple connected to the compressed air reservoir powering the truck's brakes, and the nipple pierced the flesh of his left buttock. As the air, compressed to 100 pounds per square inch, rushed into Mr. McCormick's body, he said he felt like he was diving and he had the bends. I felt the air and I felt like it was going to explode from my foot, he said. I had no choice but just to lay there, blowing up like a balloon.
Now, when you say it went in through his left buttock, that's not into his area.
No, that's just into...
Into his butt,
right.
Like into the actual cheek of his ass.
Yes. The brass nipple remained embedded in Mr. McCormick's rear as three of his co-workers, Jason Wenham, Ross Hustler, and Robbie Peterson, lifted his upper torso onto the truck's plate. While waiting for emergency services to arrive, Mr. Wenham put Mr. McCormick on his side in the recovery position, which helped him breathe despite swelling to his head and neck and one lung filling with fluid. His workmates also broke into a water cooler to find ice, which they packed around his neck to ease the swelling. Mr. McCormick credits his workmates with saving his life. When the ambulance arrived an hour after the accident, there had been an accident elsewhere in the bay and all the emergency crews were busy doing something. They arrived an hour later. Ambulance officers and a doctor removed the nipple and rushed Mr. McCormick to the hospital, where doctors drained the fluid from his lungs and cleared the wound from his buttock. McCormick said the wound was cleared with something that felt to him like a drill and that that was the most painful part. Doctors later told him they were surprised the air didn't break his skin as it separated the fat from his muscles.
See, that was going to be my question is, the hose goes into one of his buttocks, and then it begins to fill him like an Oompa Loompa.
Right. All the way up into his neck and his head between...
That was my thing. How did the air get from the outside to the inside? But so it just went between
in
the folds.
Later, yeah.
Between the blankets on your bed.
Yes.
Wow, that sounds like it would hurt.
McCormick said his skin felt like a pork roast.
How would he know that?
Crackling on the outside but soft underneath.
I felt like a ballpark Frank.
But was cheerful at the hospital's intensive care unit yesterday, saying he felt lucky to be alive. The only way for the air to escape was the usual way gas passed from the body, he said.
God.
Peterson said it was a million-to-one freak accident and that he had notified the Department of Labor.
But I can just see the woman in the intake, all right? And skin feels like pork roast? Uh-huh. Okay, great. Just take a seat over there.
He's like a big Macy's balloon.
Seriously. Jesus, God. I had no idea that story was going to go that way. Well done. Excellent. Fantastic. Well, we should just go out on that. All right. With that, we bring the curtain down on this, another exciting installment of the Rick Emerson radio program. Don't forget to go to mayofthedead.com to find out more about the Zombie Film Festival, which is going to be happening Friday. The Zombie Film Night at the Hollywood Theater this Friday, put together by a good friend, Mr. Siegfried Zieliger, featuring Demons and Night of the Comet. That's going to be this Friday, followed by Zombie Game Day. That is happening at Guardian Games Saturday, wrapping up our whole May of the Dead extravaganza. Again, find out more at mayofthedead.com. And the May of the Dead extravaganza includes the latest course of Zombie Economics, which is available now for your graduation season or, whatever. That is zombieeconomics.com. Zombieeconomics.com. Polidori Chocolates, which is Dawn's... where she wields sweets against the masses.
I do.
That is polidorichocolates.com. polidorichocolates.com. So you can find out more about all that there. After a brief musical interlude... We'll be back with an encore of today's Legion of News and an encore of this very fine radio program. I want to thank our guests, including Ms. Anna Griffin, who will join us in studio here in a couple weeks. And again, our congratulations from us to her to all from everyone at our family to everyone at her family. So she'll be in a couple times, I think, before she heads to Harvard. Let's see what else. Well, there you go. That's pretty much it. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milk Packing District in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, Advanced Technology Magic, provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer, Bruce Echo, Chief of Staff, Cheryl Kanakoa. Ham-fisted radio starts around 35 minutes. That's 4 o'clock Pacific time at Cascadia.fm and at hamfistedradio.com. It is Wednesday, May 25th, 2011, and that is the frequency, Kenneth. As always, thanks for listening. Be safe. See you all tomorrow. Bye now.